Interstate Batteries has been a proud supporter of the Sportsman's Nation since day one. They offer just about every battery under the sun, from car and truck batteries to batteries for your trail cameras and rangefinders. Select retail locations even offer cell phone repair and cracked screen repair. Find a local retail location at interstatebatteries.com. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. Welcome to the How to Hunt Deer podcast. This podcast series was designed to educate those who are interested in becoming deer hunters. We cover a variety of topics that will help you become more confident and comfortable in the field while hunting deer. On this episode, we discuss one of the most important topics when it comes to hunting deer, and that's knowing the rules and regulations in the state you will be hunting. We talk about hunter education programs, purchasing hunting licenses and tags, hunting season dates, and resources that can help you along the way. This is your first and possibly the most important step to becoming a deer hunter. So take notes and enjoy. All right, everybody, welcome to the first episode of this podcast series. I know that we are all here really excited to start talking about getting into hunting, deer hunting in some way, shape, or form. And the first thing, and I think honestly the most important thing that we need to discuss, is knowing your state's rules and regulations. And I know that there are a lot of rules and regulations out there that a hunter, whether you are experienced or have no experience at all, need to know, need to understand, because if you don't, it could cause some problems. So, Hank, why don't you kind of walk us through a little bit? What would be somebody's first step in knowing their rules and regulations, knowing what type of tags and licenses they need in order to get started deer hunting?
Well, first off, most people might not realize, but you know, the wildlife in the state is managed by a state agency, or they come by different names in each state, but they set the laws and regulate the wildlife. And so the first place to look is your state agency's website. They will have all the regulations for hunting on their website, and they also administer hunter education, which is a requirement for most hunters to purchase a license in their state. You can traditionally hunter education was done in person, and the state agencies ran those courses. Now there's some really good online providers, one being Calchemy or Today's Hunter. And you can take that course online, you know, at your own home, at your own pace. But most states will require that you take a hunter education course before you purchase a license.
Yeah. And I've noticed that when I was a kid, I had to go someplace. I had to sit through a huge, whole day type of situation where there would be an instructor and he would walk you through a whole bunch of different scenarios, and here's how you cross a fence with a gun, and the rules and regulations and whatnot. And now it's really simple. You can go online. You can, most states for the most part, have an option like this. Now when it comes to, like you said, state agencies, is that a Department of Conservation? Is it like the Sheriff's Department? What is the state agency we should be looking at for that?
Each state has departments that regulate the natural resources in those states, wildlife, forestry, fisheries, whether it's coastal or freshwater. And so these departments, depending on where you live, they are mandated to basically manage the resources for the people, for all of us, whether you hunt, fish, or you just live in that state. And they need to make it sustainable. And that's why there are rules and regulations, is that we've learned through history that we don't want to over-harvest. We want to have these animals there and resources there for the future. So we remove a percentage of them so that they're always there. So those state agencies are there for all citizens, and they have to manage for all viewpoints. And so the rules and regulations are based on safety and on sustainability. One thing that I think would be good to talk about, though, is through these hunter education classes that we're talking about, what you will learn there is how to be safe. You may not necessarily know about what you should be doing when you're afield, specifically how many you can take in terms of deer, some of the seasonality. That's other information that you need to learn, and we're going to talk about that.
Yeah. So I think we should start off about where a guy can buy a license, right? Let's say we've taken the hunter safety course online, or we've gone to a place and we've taken those classes. We're hunter safety certified now. Do you, Hank, is there a place that you recommend someone go maybe for their first couple times? Because there's a lot of places that a guy can buy a hunting license, let's say Walmart or a sporting goods store. For the first couple times, is there one spot over another that a guy should or a gal should get a license?
If I will say that, you know, if you do go to a Walmart, sporting goods store, many of them have a license sales portal, and hopefully they have a trained person there that can help you and advise you on the license you need in a particular state, because licenses are different state to state. Mm-hmm. You know. Seasons are different. I mean, all kinds of things change based on what state you're in. But if you feel more comfortable purchasing from a person that hopefully is trained in the laws of the state, I would recommend going to a store. You can absolutely purchase them online. A lot of states are even moving to apps on your phone that are great. You're actually a legal hunter if you have your phone on you. You don't actually have to carry the license. But in most states, you have to carry an ID and a hunting license on you while you hunt. And it's probably important to note that that's kind of the model of conservation in this nation. And while someone might own the land, the wildlife is owned in trust of we the people. And you pay a tax or buy a license to be able to hunt them. And it's almost the envy of the rest of the world in the amount of wildlife that know, we've been able to conserve based on these systems and state agencies and stuff.
Yeah. I'll just say that from a place to actually buy a license, when it comes to buying a license, when it comes to, you know, making sure you have the right tags that are necessary for the deer that you're hunting in the seasons that you're trying to hunt, whether it's a firearm season or an archery season, I would almost recommend going with somebody else who hunts for the first couple times. That way they know of all the tags and licenses you need, because there's a couple scenarios where I've failed in the past, where there's something called a habitat stamp in certain states, and a guy will go in and he will buy the license and he'll buy the tag and he thinks he's good, but he gets to the field and there might be a check from a conservation officer and he doesn't have that habitat stamp or any type of additional add-ons. Now, a lot of states will say, here's a combo, right? You get all this with one purchase. But there are other states out there where you have to buy certain things separately. Mm-hmm. And it can be kind of confusing for a first time license or tag purchaser. So I highly recommend asking a lot of questions in this process, especially if you're going by yourself, or if you are purchasing a tag for a youth or someone younger, so that you have everything that you need in that, you know, before you hit the field. So I definitely recommend maybe going with a mentor if you're being mentored, or going with a friend or a family member who has experience hunting, and that way any confusion can be, you know, swept away at the time of checkout. So that's I think that's very important. Now, Hank, you mentioned something there a second about different states. In the term for this in the hunting license world is resident versus non-resident, right? So a tag, if I buy a tag here in North Carolina, I can't go to Iowa or New York to use that same license. Expand on that a little bit for us, Matt.
Yeah, so each state has their license based on where you live. If you are from that state, you'd be purchasing a resident license. If you're traveling to another state, you would be purchasing a non-resident license. Typically, they're more expensive to buy non-resident licenses because you're coming into a state to utilize their natural resources. They are not reciprocal, but once you take hunter safety or hunter education, that is reciprocal across state boundaries. So you only have to do that once. Many of the states will require, just like a driver's license, a hunting license in that state each year. So if you go back each year, you would have to buy a new one. And then you would be able to purchase the tags that are required to hunt the animals, or at least harvest the animals that you're looking to take home with you. Another resource that I think would be good, Dan, that folks could ask, if the vendor that's selling the licenses is a little bit unfamiliar with the rules and regulations of what you need to purchase. That happens occasionally. Somebody might be assigned at the desk that day that does not hunt, and you don't have a mentor to bring with you. You could always talk to a law enforcement officer.
Absolutely.
They're a good resource. They're publicly available information on how to contact the conservation or law enforcement officer. I'm not talking about state police or your town police. These conservation departments have what's environmental law officers that will regulate and make sure that we protect the resources, and they would know. You could also just call the dispatch for your wildlife agency. They may know as well, but a great resource is to talk to law enforcement.
Let me just say one thing about resident versus non-resident license. Resident licenses are way more affordable than non-residents.
Yes.
You pay a premium to hunt out of state. And, these new hunters listening, I would recommend finding places close to home to hunt. Hunt in your home state. Become a customer of your local state agency. But also, rely on your local community, your peer group, for these mentors to help you along. You'll never be, the lowest hanging fruit on finding somebody to help you get a field or mentor you hunting is going to be someone that already knows you or someone you know. Stay close to home. Look for opportunities close to home. Sometimes those don't exist, but often they do. But staying within your state and hunting locally will help you continue to get a field and be much more affordable.
And one of the major motivations for most people to hunt is the food aspect of getting that. And if you're, adventure hunting is exciting, and we all have done it. We all will continue to do it. But to have that resource close to home, it actually checks that box for a lot of people, is being able to go out in your county or in your town to go hunting and be able to bring home food. So certainly don't overlook that. You don't need to travel, X hundred miles to be able to harvest an animal. You can do that right outside your back door.
Right. All right. So, that's the basics, right? Every state also, I know they do in Iowa where I live, publishes a rules and regulations booklet, right? And in this booklet, we can use the resources from the website, but they also have these booklets that you can also find on the websites. And in these booklets, every rule and regulation a guy or gal needs, from something that it, from the simple rules to the most detailed rule about, you can't shoot a gun this far from a building, or you can't, you have to wear blaze orange. Let's start talking a little bit about some of these common deer hunting rules that we should all expect. And for the most part, what we're going to talk about next here, these are high level, right? Again, go back to your state agency's website or the rules and regulations pamphlet for that year, and take a look at that. But Hank, talk to us a little bit about some common deer hunting rules that we all should expect in the field.
Sure. Most states require you wear blaze orange while hunting, especially during a rifle season. Oftentimes during archery season, it's not required. But if there is a gun season in season, and I guess we'll get to seasons in a minute and how those progress. But many states require a blaze orange vest, many a blaze orange hat at a minimum.
Why is that?
It's safety. So you can see fellow hunters afield, especially if you're hunting property with multiple hunters on it. But it's important to note that deer cannot see orange, and we'll get to that later. But the deer do not see orange as we see it. And so it's an opportunity for us to be seen by other hunters and humans. But not alert the wildlife or the deer that were there. But you can expect to probably wear some blaze orange, and And honestly, it's not going to mess you up hunting. It's a smart thing to do.
Yeah. And that right there kind of boils down everything when it comes to safety, right? Safety is the most important thing when it comes to hunting. I mean, we're talking about firearms in some instances. We're talking about, you know, archery has a lot of sharp objects that go along with it.
Climbing up in trees.
Yep, climbing up in trees, all these things. So it's exciting for a new hunter to go out into the field and, you know, chase deer for the very first time. And that excitement sometimes can overtake the thought process. I mean, I've been hunting for several years and I still make, you know, I have brain farts, I call them sometimes, where I'm just like, oh man, I shouldn't have done that, or be just because of the excitement level. So it's very important that we all, we talk about, safety, especially if you are in a tree stand. You know, Hunter Orange is great for firearm season. It's required in a lot of states, but also safety harnesses are also in some states required if you want to climb into a tree stand. And that's just, in my opinion, a recommendation when it comes to safety that you should be doing no matter if your state requires it or not. It's just something that is very important. I've had slips and falls in the past when I wasn't wearing them, and now it's just a part of my gear, the safety harness. So from a safety standpoint, very, very important.
The good news there, Dan, is that hunting is very safe.
Yes.
And for folks that are, you know, potentially a little bit intimidated by the fact that there are all these things, they're in place because we're trying to make folks safe. And if statistically, when you look at it, hunting is safer than some, you know, typical sports recreation, yep. Volleyball, soccer, people get injured more often in those types of things. And I think a big reason of that is the culture around hunting, and for so long, and the fact that you have to go through these hunter education or hunter safety courses, it creates a foundation for most people to think about the basics of how to be safe. And we may have those moments of relapse where we don't remember some of those, but by the vast majority, I still remember the rules that were taught to me in hunter safety, because it was so foundational that, you know, which way to control the firearm when I'm holding it.
Yeah.
I think about that when I'm walking, and that I took hunter safety when I was a teenager, and I'm in my 40s at this point.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I'll just reiterate that the most dangerous aspect of deer hunting is tree stands.
Yeah.
And if you wear that safety harness and lifeline, which means you're connected from the time you leave the ground to the time you come back down, they're required on our, you know, our new hunter events and stuff like that. And I would just recommend everybody take the time, invest in that, and use it.
Or just hunt from the ground. You don't have to be
exactly.
in a tree.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. All right. So the next thing that I think is important is we talk about when you're out in the field, and there are rules and regulations that are important. And I want to talk about the license and making sure that you have it on you at all times. I know that in Iowa, you're required to have your license and your tags with you at all times. That way, if for some reason you're stopped by a conservation officer, they'll simply approach you and say, hey, do you mind if I take a look at your hunting license? It's very important to have that on you. So all you can do is say, hey, I'm certified in hunter safety. I am certified, you know, I have a hunting license. I have the tags necessary for that, for this deer hunt. And, they'll tell you, oh, hey, let me check it real quick. And it's not very common, honestly. I've been in my 20 years of hunting, over 20 years of hunting, I think I've been stopped by a conservation officer one time to check my tags and license, and I just whipped them out, showed it to him, and he wished me good luck, and he was on his way. And so it's very important to carry that with you at all times. Mm-hmm. I would recommend some kind of plastic bag to keep it in, just in case it gets wet. And then, you know, we're going to get into a whole bunch of other topics about you know, tagging an animal later on. But you have that if you are successful in the woods, you have that tag on that animal immediately, and it's just a good practice to have. Now, There are a couple other things that we need to talk about here, and let's talk about age requirements. I know that Matt, you live in New York, mm-hmm. and at what age can you start hunting in New York?
Right now, for deer, 14.
14.
Yeah, they're it's one of the higher age restrictions in the country. Most states allow children that are probably 10 or 12, or in some states actually have no age right. restriction. You can start hunting based on the parent or guardian's discretion.
Yeah. If you're accompanied yeah. by a licensed adult,
that's
you, a child can go hunting.
Yeah.
So why don't you expand on that a little bit? Why do you think some of these age requirements are put in place? It's just another thing to be aware of when you're in the woods.
Well, I mean, a lot of it is based on the maturity of the kids. But for the people that are listening today, if you're, you know, above that age, you're fine. I don't think that the way that the rules are set are that restrictive for most folks. Being able to start hunting, learning hunting at young ages are good. One thing I wanted to touch on, you're talking about having your license on you and tags. Some states, you said New York, which has triggered my memory, actually requires to have your tag displayed on you. You have to have it in
yep.
your back. Very few states have that requirement.
Wisconsin is one.
Very,
like
very
that.
Few.
Classic.
But yeah, it's kind of an older traditional way of management, but it still exists today. And something else that you had said triggered a memory was having your license on you and you talking about it, being able to have it on your phone. You'd be a licensed hunter if you have it on there. We haven't mentioned this, but phone apps, that's a place that you can have all of the seasons and licenses for many states, being able to look that up from the woods, being able to say, when can I start hunting today? Is it daylight or is it 30 minutes before, 30 minutes after? It varies. Or what's in season today? You can look that up right there on your phone.
And it's important. We're calling it tagging, but in some states it's like telecheck, where you just have to phone in mm-hmm. that you harvested an animal. And obviously they're going to teach you this in hunter safety, but also some of the apps you can check in game on
yeah.
as well. So that's a nice resource for there. And then, you know, check in a different way. But if you're hunting public land and stuff like that, sometimes you have to check in at actually like a check station or check the animal out at the
yeah.
check station. So if you are hunting public land, I would recommend you ask somebody specifically about regulations based on those.
Let me expand on that. So talking about sustainability and making sure we don't harvest too many animals, that is why or tagging the deer or checking them in is a big way we track that. So for folks that don't understand it, in some places you physically have to take the tag that came when you purchased your license. So there's the license, just this broader, I'm allowed to hunt, and then I would buy my deer hunting tags, and it allows me to harvest certain animals. We'll talk about that. And those tags, at least in my state, physically have to go on the animal. So
yes.
that if I'm driving, it has to be tagged before I put them in the back of my truck or however I'm going to transport that deer, and I am stopped, not only is the law enforcement officer going to check my license, but they're going to see that deer has been tagged. It means it's literally has the tag on it. Not all states require that.
Yeah.
Then there is the reporting system of being, which Hank is touching on there, is you have to either through your phone, through the computer, or actually an actual physical check station, you have to bring that animal or report it to the state. So those are different things. Actually physically putting a tag on it and then telling the state, yes, I took the animal, whether it was male or female, you know, the season you took it in, what you were using, and then they track that.
Yeah.
Many states that's mandatory and have very good results. Some states, not everybody reports it, but they're able to calculate how many animals are taken just through statistics. They mm-hmm. only have to sample a certain amount. Some hunters think nobody ever looked at my deer. I never checked it. How does the state know how many animals were harvested? And they only have to get a certain percentage. So They may go to locations where there are animals there, such as not everybody cuts up their own deer, so they might go to a butcher's shop and look at all the animals in the cooler. Or they may go to a taxidermist and look at the animals there. And as long as they sample and get a certain percentage of animals through those ways, they can calculate how many are being taken each year and watch that trend over time. So it's your responsibility as a new hunter. Pay attention to those laws. If you're supposed to put a tag on the animal once you kill it, put the tag on it. Obviously, it's what's legal. But I strongly encourage everybody to report your harvest, even if it's not mandatory. It is in most states, because it helps the state agency track what's being done.
Yeah. And that, long story short, that's best for the natural resource. Mm-hmm. That's best for the deer herd in that state or county. So, Hank, let's talk a little bit about bag limits and the sex of a deer and why that is important.
Perfect. So bag limits would be how many animals or deer you're allowed to harvest in a given season. And every state's probably different. I mean, I'm sure there are states that have the same bag limits, but you know, Kentucky, you can only harvest one buck a year. North Carolina, you can harvest two antlered bucks a year. Georgia, same thing. And you know, I don't know how many antlerless deer you can harvest in Kentucky, but I think you can harvest 8 antlerless deer in North Carolina and maybe 10 in Georgia. You can tell I'm more from the Southeast here, but every state has different, you know, bag limits on the number of animals you can harvest in a season, even, you know, laws of how many you can harvest in one day in some instances. Mm-hmm. But, it is another way to set limits to make sure we don't over harvest. And, you know, most hunters probably kill one deer or less per season, on average. But there are many hunters that get out there and take a number of deer, fill their freezers, fill others' freezers. But also bag limits are broken down by sex, obviously male and female. And that's a way, by targeting different animals, you can control populations and, you know, sex ratios and that kind of stuff. So seasons are also based on what they're trying to accomplish with a harvest of a population.
Yeah. And a lot of the times the sex of an animal or the tag, the license that you buy determines what, or the tag that you buy determines what sex you're able to shoot. In certain states, Iowa is an example. It's broken down by county. In one of the counties that I hunt, the county says, okay, you can shoot 10,000 does. Like that's how many tags are allocated for female deer. And then a regular buck, I can only get one buck tag, right? And then if I want to continue to hunt, I have to shoot, you know, I have to shoot does. I have to shoot does. And then every single tag is for one animal. Right. It's not, you don't just keep using it. Like you said, you have to tag that specific animal with a tag. So
the variation across even a county or a township, you know, but across states and around the country has to do with how productive those deer herds are. In places that there are a lot of deer and they're a problem, there'll be more tags available.
Yeah.
In places where the population is just right at the point where it's balanced with the habitat or even below it, and it could support more deer, there's not going to be as much opportunity. So
Right. The
more productive the land in places where there's a lot of agriculture, which is a lot of food for deer, and places where there's a lot of disturbance in the forest where there's, again, a lot of more food, there's a lot more deer. You'll see populations increase, and that changes on an annual basis because deer populations go up as we harvest them, or will go up as land use changes, or it'll go down. And so it's this moving target, and it's all based on science. So
Yeah. Trust
the regulations, trust the state agency, because they're doing this to keep it sustainable, but just stay within those limits.
Let me just say, I feel like what I talked about of those southeastern regulations probably skewed what people think. You know, Pennsylvania, for example, I think they get one buck tag and you actually have to apply for an antlerless deer tag. They still have a lottery for an antlerless deer tag.
So yeah.
So in the Northeast or Midwest, you know, the numbers of animals that you might be able to harvest, depending on it, could change a lot. So I just feel like I gave people a misrepresentation of like, you can kill 10 or 12 deer.
Within a state. So Dan said I'm from New York. In New York, there are places where I can get multiple antlerless tags because the land's so productive, and there are other places I'm not allowed to get a tag. I can't, even if I applied. There's no application system in a more mountainous region of the state. So it's going to vary depending on where you hunt. It's based on location.
Again, knowing the rules and regulations of your state, your county, and even some instances on a smaller level, like a community, right? A city.
If it seems a little bit overwhelming to hear all this, it could be. And as you kind of walk down the path of becoming a hunter and a seasoned hunter, it'll start becoming second nature.
Yes.
I would encourage the listeners to not be intimidated.
Exactly.
I mean, it's easy for me to say that, but take hunter education or hunter safety, purchase a license, the basic license that you need, and stay within the limits. Don't overthink too much of it, but if you know that you can shoot whatever the deer is, and the place that you can go to do that once you have access, we're going to talk about that in another episode. Just know within those basic limits of, I'm allowed to shoot one buck. I have my tag with me. I'm licensed. I'm certified, and I'm on a piece of ground that I'm allowed to be. As long as you follow those basic rules, that's fine.
Yep, absolutely. And I think we're going to close on this, and it is weapons. There are different seasons throughout a fall or an overall hunting season where you are going to be required to have different tags, potentially different licenses, depending on what weapon that you decide to shoot, whether that is a rifle, a muzzleloader, and we're going to get into weapons in another episode. But just know that depending on what weapon you choose, it's going to require potentially a different license, a certain time of the year that you can use that weapon. For example, I'll just use this as an example. In Iowa, I can start hunting with a bow and arrow on October 1st, all the way through November into December. And then in December, there is a shotgun season. So then firearms kick off for a while. That stops, and then and you have to have a different tag, and you have to have a different license for that firearm season. Then it goes back into an archery season. So
the reason that is each one is have different efficiencies, right? I mean, if you think about these different implements, a bow and arrow, it's a challenge.
Yeah.
You have to have the animal that you want to shoot pretty close to you. Go as far to the other end of the spectrum. A rifle, you can shoot farther if you can see, and it's safe and be able to do that. So those efficiencies are what change over time. And so just like licenses and tags or bag limits, where the state can increase or decrease bag limits over time, they can increase or decrease the number of tags that are given to a county, they can also change within reason the amount of days that you can go out with different implements.
Yeah.
So firearms are pretty efficient, and in most states, a majority of the deer harvest is coming through those firearms. But being able to change the number of days those different implements are out there. So if you're really trying to jump into this and want to be the most efficient, you should learn how to shoot a gun safely, go out with a firearm. But if you want to maximize the number of days that you're afield, maybe dabble in all the different things that are allowed in your state.
Absolutely.
I do. I like being outside. I love bow hunting probably the most, but I like maximizing my time afield. So I have no problem. I own different each implement that's allowed in my state, and will hunt each season as avidly as I can and as time allows, because I want to give myself the best chance at getting a deer. It's hunting. You know, when you go out there, you're not guaranteed anything. And I may hunt, you know, many days over the season and only take one deer. As Hank mentioned a little earlier, the average hunter probably shoots one or less deer a year. So I try to maximize that.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's important to note that these seasons, when they happen, like archery seasons are usually earlier. And if you're in an urban area, you know, you might have more opportunity to hunt with archery around you than you could with a gun.
Yeah.
Or maybe if you're in a more urban area, you can only hunt with a muzzleloader or a shotgun, which aren't deemed to travel as far. But, you know, you need to look at the opportunities around you and also look at implements based on that. You know, when we've started new hunters, we often try to start them as early in the season as possible. The weather's nicer. There's more daylight after work, things like that. So there's a little bit more opportunity, and archery seasons can be fairly long. So if there is an opportunity to archery hunt, you know, with crossbows and stuff like that, we'll get into that kind of stuff later, as you mentioned. But you need to also look at the opportunities around you and just take advantage of what works best for you.
Absolutely. And I think this is a great place to wrap up this episode. We've covered a lot of information really quick in this episode. But to reiterate, it is very important to check your state rules and regulations, when you can hunt, where you can hunt, what weapon to use, bag limits, sex, antler regulations. And like Matt said, it sounds overwhelming, but I can assure you, and we can all assure you, that it is not. Maybe the first year, but after that, it just keeps getting easier and easier. And you know what you need, you know when you're going to need it. And it's the first step to having a whole bunch of fun out in the field.
Absolutely.
Thanks for listening to today's episode. If you want to find out more information and utilize additional resources, visit deerassociation.com/hunting101. There you will find links to the YouTube series, Guide to Successful Deer Hunting ebook, new hunter signup sheets, and Deer Hunting 101 courses. Additionally, you can listen to more outdoor-themed podcasts at sportsmansnation.com, on iTunes, or anywhere you download your podcasts.